countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Now on RTE Radio 1, it's time for this week's Countrywide with John Cook.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Coming up between now and 9 o'clock, the wisdom found in walking, the old traditions of Halloween in the Burren, and what can farmers expect at the online mart this weekend.
Text 51551, email countrywide at rte.ie, and tweet at RTE Countrywide.
And it's John Cook in for Damien for the next few weeks. You're very welcome. First of all, this morning, we're heading for a farm in County Mayo because as Galway's Project Baba is celebrating the cultural, economic and environmental contribution of sheep to our lives with many online events this weekend, I paid a visit to the Flanagan Farm where Michael, Aisling and their family make Velvet Cloud yoghurt and Rockfield cheese from the milk of their 300-strong flock of dairy sheep.
You're in Rockfield, County Mayo, just between Clamaris and Knock.
And the sun is shining.
And the sun is shining, the birds are singing. You brought the nice weather with you.
What a lovely part of the world. So, Aisling, what's a girl from Dunleary doing in County Mayo?
Oh, sure. Why else, John? A man. he followed me around the world, but we ended up back in County Mayo.
You said you were always into farming, though.
Yeah, I was always interested. My mother grew up in a farm in just outside Mitchelstown, and I'd go down to my uncle John's farm every summer. I loved it. He had a pig farm at the time.
And that led you to agricultural science in UCD. And this man here, who you heard had a lot of road frontage, was it? This is your family farm, or is this land?
This has been in the family for a long, long time, yes.
So we started off, I went out to Italy to work for Bord Bia, and then I moved on working for Heinz, and then Michael followed me out.
Sheep dairying was quite commonplace where we were living in France and Italy, and the idea was always there at the back of the head.
Do you miss Dublin at all, Aisling?
No, not at all. I go up and down. I'm fortunate. I have family still there. So, pre-COVID, I would have been going up and down a lot. So, kind of realise how lucky we are to be out here in this fabulous countryside.
There's a lot of people leaving the city for the countryside now after lockdown, or realising they could work remotely, realising things could be different. What would you advise them to head for the West?
I would, yes. Now, you do miss the restaurants and you do miss the cinema and things like that. But the lifestyle is fabulous. Very good for the mental health to be able to go out and work, you know, walk in nature and listen to the sounds of the birds.
We have two breeds here. We have Friesland and Lacan. They're specific dairy animals. The Friesland are from Northern Europe and the Lacan are a French breed in origin. Like, they have much more milk than is ever required by the lambs they produce. And your regular commercial meat sheep will produce milk for probably 8-10 weeks, and there isn't a whole lot left after that. The best of these could produce milk for 10 months.
Would these sheep get to graze outdoors, or what happens now through the winter?
We graze them outdoors for as long as possible, which generally speaking is 9.5-10 months. We have to rest the land in the winter for a couple of months, otherwise there'd be nothing there in the spring. So they're off grass, or they're rotated off grass for about 2 months in the winter time.
Okay, and what are they eating inside?
The silage. We also have some of them out wintered on brassica crops, kale in particular.
You're growing that yourself?
Yes, we have the kale just across the road there.
That's funny, because I thought those were big cabbage plants when I came in the driveway.
Kale, I suppose, is a type of cabbage, but there's a hell of a lot of cabbage to eat there. You also have a ram there at the moment with them. We're in the peak breeding.
I know what a ram is.
We're in the peak breeding season here. So you'll see this fella. That's a Friesland ram, and looking, I suppose, for some action.
He's sniffing the air around him there.
He's sniffing the air.
We know what he's after.
Exactly.
So, Michael, this is the milking parlour, and actually, I noted on the Velvet Cloud website the most common question you get asked is, how do you milk a sheep?
Milking a sheep is similar, really, to milking a cow. They're milked in a parlour, it's just a scaled down version.
Maybe the dilemma for people is that when they look at the sheep they're used to in other farms around Ireland, they don't see those big full udders we see in these sheep.
No.
That's why they're wondering, how do you get milk out of that?
That's exactly right. You mean you'll see udders on these to rival what you'd see on some dairy cows at times.
Now, the Friesland and Lacan sheep, he said, are specific dairying sheep, but you wouldn't get a good leg of lamb out of them for the Sunday roast.
No, you'll get a leg of lamb, but it wouldn't necessarily be a good leg of lamb. They're poor meat animals. The male lambs, the ram lambs, end up going to the abattoir just the same as any other lamb, but they wouldn't be the best of stock.
Now, here's where the milk is cooled after milking time today.
Yeah, and everybody that comes here, John, has to taste the milk.
Okay.
We have to introduce everybody to sheep's milk. So you're next on the list.
Right. Okay to drink from this?
Absolutely. Right.
Bottoms up. This tastes pretty good.
Not as strange as you thought.
Not at all. It's just nice, creamy milk, yeah.
A lot of people are hesitant. They think, oh, sheep, oh, God, that's going to taste a bit odd or something. But that's not actually the case. Once they taste it, it's a richer, creamier milk.
It tastes pretty good to me anyway. I'd have it on my Weetabix. Your research into the product focused on the health benefits of the milk, Aisling, and that's what has struck a chord with a lot of your customers now. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah, I think that was it. We thought perhaps that the market was more in the gourmet end of things. And yeah, we have a strong market with chefs and people who like good food. But really, 90% of the consumers who buy our milk are consumers who are very much concerned about their gut health, their microbiome, or allergies or sensitivities they might have to other dairy. So John, now we're in our production unit. So this is where we make our sheep's yogurt and our sheep's cheese. So I'll just bring you into the chill here.
And you've got large stainless steel vats here full of yogurt.
This was made earlier week.
This is a big pot of Velvet Cloud live sheep's milk yogurt, natural.
So off you go, John.
That's lovely.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is really thick and creamy. Yeah. I think I can see why you would say it could be savoury or sweet.
But yet it doesn't have that strong tang that I think sometimes people wonder, would something made from sheep's milk have a sheepy, they sometimes say, to us taste? Doesn't.
Yeah, I'd recommend it. Lovely.
Now we move into the cheese room.
Oh, wow.
So this is a bit different.
Looks a bit like a wine cellar. And the smell of cheese here, I want a nice a glass of red as well, if you have it.
I'm sorry, next time you're coming, we'll arrange that. But
it's a musty smell. It's a cheese smell. What you're smelling is, I suppose, the spores of the mould that helps to ripen the cheese. We ripen in here for 3 months. So you see the different colours of cheese as you go around the shelves.
And you're also selling online now as well, Aisling. Tell me about that, because I think that's been the big impact of COVID on your business.
50% of our sales would have been going to the high-end restaurant sector, but they were closed overnight in March. So overnight, we lost 50% of our turnover. Our son is in computer science in UCD, so he set us up an online shop. And we started to sell our yogurt online. So we put it into boxes, we chill it, it goes out with ice, and within 24 hours of being dispatched, the customer can get it. And we've introduced cheese since then, and we've introduced wooden cheese boards as well. So the good news, I suppose, from that is we haven't recovered all our sales, but it's opened up markets all around Ireland. So we have maybe 100 stockists, you know, shops who support us and sell our yogurt, but they would be mainly concentrated in the West and in Dublin. But now anybody from Donegal to Dingle can buy our yogurt on velvetcloud.ie.
And thanks to Aisling and Michael Flanagan and their sheep there, all black and white sheep there. A very enjoyable day on their sheep farm in County Mayo. Velvetcloud.ie for further details. Like lots of people, Countrywide had planned to be in Galway for Project Baba as part of Galway 2020. But there are many exhibitions and events still online this weekend. You can check it out, projectbaba.com. Now, last week, a clip of a Mart manager from Kerry went viral. Dan McCarthy's emotional Mart report from Kenmare showed just how stressed farmers were about the prospect of doing business under level 5 restrictions.
This online thing is a complete and utter joke. It won't work, it can't work, and it won't work. We're the people of rural Ireland, and we're the people that's trying to keep rural Ireland going, and we're the people that are going to get this country out of the recession we're in. But please listen to me and take note of what I'm saying tonight, because this is a total and utter disaster for the people that are trying to sell their cattle. I'm asking you to help me and help the people that are trying to get this country moving again, and not to be trying to close us down and walk over us.
Dan McCarthy there, the manager of Kenmare Co-op Mart, telling us that this online thing at the Marts is a complete and utter joke. Ray Doyle of ICOS, the Irish Cooperative Organisation Society, joins me now. Ray, good morning to you and thanks for joining us on Countrywide. The level 5 restrictions mean there are no farmers around the ring. The Marts went completely online, but only 3 days in, some of the Marts didn't even go ahead. What happened last Saturday?
Yes, there was a major software glitch last Saturday, and unfortunately with IT, as we are all too aware, things happen. Breakdowns have happened at national government level, at banks levels, and it happened, unfortunately, with the MART software last Saturday. The major software provider that was involved has actually rectified that issue and put in redundancies in place. So hopefully this, today, we will not see a repeat of that.
Hopefully.
But hopefully. So, well, look, there is two other software companies there offering services as well. So it was unfortunate. It was just fortunate or unfortunate. It was just one software provider had the major problem last Saturday. But that is hopefully behind us. Dan has touched, though, on maybe the bigger problem. The bigger problem is rural broadband itself, because some of the marts where the software was not a problem, just the broadband coverage for both the people potentially buying and sometimes for the mart centres themselves.
Yeah.
Can be a problem.
And I think because of broadband varying around the country, there are varying reports of this. There are claims of a 30% fall in animal throughput at marts last week, claims by some rural TDs. I've seen that cattle prices could be dropping by €150 per head of cattle due to these restrictions. Are they?
Well, the figures don't seem to bear that out, because if I just give you a few figures, just up to the 25th of October, which was last week, cattle numbers were only back 9.5%, so almost 1.3 million cattle had been traded in the country's marts. Average prices, that varies greatly, so some of the commentators of poor prices, that's for certain classes of livestock, but I have a report from one Western mart there last week who had a 95% clearance of animals, and the actual prices were actually €50 ahead of 2019, albeit that they were probably €20 down on the week before, maybe as a result of the issues that happened last week, and maybe as a result of weather. But most managers seem to indicate it's a fact of just that there is no live exports at the moment to North Africa and Turkey.
This is a really important time of the year. Suckler farmers will make possibly their main income for the year in these coming weeks. So I think we can see why it's so stressful. The Minister, Charlie McConnellogue, has been asked to appear before the Oireachtas Agriculture Committee regarding a return to in-person trading at marts. The Chairman, Jackie Cahill, calling for the redeployment of civil servants from restaurant inspection duties to supervise marts and to make sure the small number of attendees allowed could be socially distanced. Can you see that happening, Ray?
Well, we, as you can imagine, we have been in serious negotiations and discussions with the minister and his officials. And unfortunately, the indications are that there will be no change until the government and the cabinet and NPHET decide that a change is required. I just heard just earlier there on your own a news clip that the incidence of COVID-19 seems to have dropped considerably, and we're only a week into it. So I would contend that may be a good reason for us to hopefully get a relaxation of these measures imposed on the mart, but we unfortunately would not hold out much hope for that with our discussions with government.
I'm just wondering as well, just finally and briefly, Ray, I mean, is it safe? Farmers are seen, I'm told, and I've been at some of these marts, huddling outside, looking around laptops or iPhones at what's going on inside. I mean, maybe there's a risk there too.
Well, there possibly is, but that's a personal responsibility of the people involved, and I suppose that we would encourage them not to partake in that particular activity, because that's contrary to what these restrictions are about.
Thank you, Ray. I'm going to have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us this morning. Ray Doyle from ICOS there. You're listening to Countrywide. It's John Cook here, and still to come, weighing the calves on a County Limerick farm and the importance of keeping jack-o'-lantern lit, even at level 5 restrictions.
Countrywide on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.
And it's 51551 for your texts. Catherine Quinn and her granddaughter Hannah have a small Hereford herd in County Limerick, and Hannah's been recording their lives on the farm through the lockdowns and as the seasons change. And we've become especially fond of these stories, especially her grandmother Catherine's tales here on Countrywide. Well, this week, their cows and their calves joined more than 800,000 others across the country as they were brought to the weighing scales as part of the BEEP scheme. The deadline for weighing them is tomorrow, so the job had to be done even in lockdown. Now, not all of us would relish the sight of seeing the weighing scales right now, but the cows and calves, well, they seem to take it in their stride.
Good dog.
Oh, they're coming. Oh, good.
Six. Good girls. Follow Granny. Go on. Come on, Sybil. Up you go. Good girl.
What we're doing today is we're doing weighing. I guess no human likes to sit getting a weighing scales, but for a cow and or a calf, it's a little bit more tricky again, isn't it?
Oh, it is, because they're a bit suspicious of the scales and they don't like stepping on them. But usually they will if they're enticed with a bucket with some meal in.
Because I guess the aim is that when you have the calf weaned, it's about half the body weight of the cow. And we have a couple of big cows, and I can think of one in particular might be your favourite. Do you have any concerns about Pilgrim, Granny?
I don't have any concerns about Pilgrim, because although she's a big cow, she's a big frame. So she might be a little bit on the fat side, but... I don't think that it's all fat. She's a very big, tall, big frame of a cow. So we'll see. We'll see how her calf is performing. It's helpful from our point of view because it gives us a very clear idea of how the cow is performing and whether or not she's a suitable cow for breeding.
We get €50 for weighing the cow and calf through the scheme. We get €30 for the vaccinations, which we've done. And we get €10 then for doing the dung sampling to see if they have any worms in their system.
€90 is it all together. It's a lot, but it's a lot of work as well, bringing them in and... at a time when maybe normally you wouldn't bring them in. So, it's helpful, but at the end of the day, it's not a huge amount of money either.
Well, the weighing man is coming, so it's going to be a mask on for me. And
yes, I think so. Jim and I will be excluded from the proceedings, won't we, Jim?
Good boy. Good dog.
Jim is an Irish Wolfhound cross and loves being part of everything that's going on the farm, but not today. Not today, Jim.
Come on. Up you go. Come on. This one's definitely the biggest anyway. Come on. Yeah, come on.
Your heaviest will be 200.
Nearly 200?
Yeah. He does weigh well.
As I said, you're impressed every year.
I'm Tennyson Eager. I work for the producer group Irish Hereford Prime. So today I'm actually weighing Hannah's cows and calves as part of the BEEP scheme.
You come here every year, I think, for the last 3 years to weigh our cows and calves. And obviously you're impressed with what you see in the calibre of the stock, Tennyson. But stop laughing.
Absolutely, absolutely, Hannah. And we're hoping that the cows might not be quite so heavy as normal.
You're calling my lady's fat. Is that what you're doing?
No, I would never say that, Hannah. Never say that. But I suppose we're looking for that cow-to-calf ratio to be as close as possible.
What are we hoping to get today from the weights? What are we hoping to see from the weights?
The weigh the calves and just check that they're, make sure that they're reaching their desired average daily gain of the kilo or more per day. And, this will also, comparing it to weights from last year, we'll get to see any underlying issues in the herd. And also, it'll highlight cows that are better in milk or poorer in milk production. So it'll be highlighted in the calf's daily gain.
Go on, go on. So this is Granny's favourite cow going up on the scales, if we can get her on. Good girl. Good girl, Pilgrim. Go on.
Walking like she's twice as she is. You know what I mean? So yeah, that's realistic. Sure, we'll continue on with a few more and I'll tell you all at the end.
Yep. All done. Well,
how did we do?
Pilgrim's calf is there.
Yes.
And you know the way we're aiming for over a kilo
a
day?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's 1.2.
Excellent. Good.
Average daily weight gain.
Yeah, very good. Very good.
She wasn't so keen about getting on the scales herself, though.
Wasn't she?
No.
No, she didn't like it. I didn't think she would. Oh.
That's her weight there. 690 kilos.
690?
Yeah.
Is she the heaviest?
No, she isn't.
Isn't she?
No.
Oh, there you are. You see, I told you. Sure, some of them are seven.
Some of them are a bit more than seven, but we won't say anything.
Oh, very good.
Will we let them out?
We will. I think it's time to let them out into the sunshine. It's a beautiful day.
And that was Hannah Quinn Mulligan reporting from her own farmyard in County Limerick. Interesting as well to note that the Irish Cattle and Sheep Farmers Association are calling for an extension of deadlines in the BEEP scheme there. And it's about dung sampling kits. We may hear more about that one again. Well, it's a wet and windy one out there ahead of tonight's rare blue moon, a rare occurrence indeed for Halloween. But Storm Aidan will pass, the winds will die down and the rain will end, and then it'll be time to go for a walk. Yeah, because these cold, dark days, well, it might seem more natural to snuggle up in front of the fire, but my next guests all believe in the power of a good walk. Good morning to Moncon McGann, to Shane O'Mara and to Natasha Murta. Moncon, I'll go to you first of all this morning. Have you been out walking in a wet and windy Westmeath yet?
Not this morning, no, but I've been walking every day this week, and at some point today I will venture out.
Sometimes it's actually, it's quite an awakening experience as well. It's good to feel alive, I often say, when I'm out in the rain anyway. Tell me what you feel about the power of a good walk, Moncon.
It's really hard to define it, isn't it? But anyone who knows how they feel before a walk and after they go for a walk will realise that it's almost a quantum difference. It somehow wakes us up to ourselves, but to everything, almost to the landscape around us. So I've been living here in Westmeath for 23 years, and almost every time I go, you know, the amount of back boreens in Ireland, we sort of, county councils curse it, but it means that you can constantly almost find a different way to go, a different way around fields, a different trail, and it just opens you up to the world in a different way. And what seems lovely is this year during COVID, people are seeming to wake up to the potential, to the power of walking more.
Right, I think we've all just had that feeling of wanting to get out. Shane O'Mara, good morning to you as well. You're a professor of experimental brain research at Trinity College Dublin. So maybe you give us the science. What are the benefits of a good walk?
Well, I think Mankin has already hit on some of them there. Walking makes us, it's good for every aspect of our being. And we kind of underestimate the effects that it has on us. Both for ourselves as individuals and for society at large. So, you know, for individuals, it's good for your cardiovascular health, but it's also good for your muscular health. And in particular, it's very, very good for your state of kind of well-being. And societies where people walk more tend to be societies where people feel much more connected to each other. So I think it's very hard to understate the power of walking.
You talk about different kinds of walking. I was interested to read about an awe walk, a social walk. Maybe take me through, what do you mean by an awe walk?
So I kind of make the case in the book that I did on walking recently that actually walking is a poor word. It doesn't describe the range of experience that we can have. So you end up adding words to it to kind of extend its range. So an awe walk is kind of almost what Mankin has already described, where you walk out in nature and you feel yourself slightly small in relation to the size of the world, to the size of the environment you're walking around in, and you get a kind of a positive effect from that.
Maybe
and
like walking, when you're walking at, say, I don't know, the Cliffs of Moher or
exactly,
a forest.
Exactly, that kind of thing. But it can happen in your local neighbourhood. All you have to do is pay attention to the horizon, to the sounds that are around you, try and look at the trees, try and look for signs of wildlife, any of those kinds of things that take you away from being within your own head.
And a social walk, is that going
for
a chat with a friend?
The experience of walking is kind of social walking, walking with another person, either in companionable silence or just having a good old chat about nothing at all. Because we evolved as social walkers. That's how humans conquered the world. That's how we came out of Africa all those years ago, was in families, in tribes, in groups. So we're exquisitely attuned to each other when we're moving together.
Okay. I often think when I'm talking about kids or the family or the bills, it's easier to talk to my wife if we could ever get out for a walk. Maybe you just feel a bit calmer. But you say there are problem-solving walks as well.
Yeah. So walking, it turns out, is an interesting boost to creativity. And this is something I think writers and philosophers and artists have known for years, but psychologists have only cottoned on to recently. So we can show this very, very simply and straightforwardly. You bring people to your lab and you ask them to do what's called a divergent uses task. So you give them common household objects and they have to come up with other uses for them. So how many uses can you come up with for a can of beans in 20 seconds? And people might come up with 10 or 8 or that kind of number. Get them to do an 8 or 10 minute walk before you give them this task. And on average, they'll come up with about twice as many ideas as they would have done had they just been seated. And this is an age-independent effect. People who are in their late 60s and early 70s will perform at about twice as well as people in their early 20s if they've gone for a walk. And this is because walking mobilizes your brain, it mobilizes your body, and bits of the brain that are quiescent when you're seated are suddenly active when you're moving.
Okay. Natasha Murta, good morning to you as well. Natasha, you've been brought walking from a very young age yourself, since you were a child of 8 with your dad in particular.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, walking is sort of something that's always been there in my life. And as you just said, walking with my dad in particular and my brother when I was a kid out on the west coast of Ireland was a huge part of my childhood. We would gear up and put our anoraks and wellies on and face the elements and, you know, hike over mountains and sand dunes and all that sort of stuff. And I think my older brother and I, we sort of had this love-hate relationship with walking when we were younger, and we thought, oh God, we have to go and do this. But the best part afterwards was we knew that we would get a little ham and cheese toastie or a packet of crisps and a rock shandy in the pub, and mum and dad would have their, you know, pint of Guinness and Bulmers. And it was this sort of, we always knew that this wet and wretched walk would be rewarded with something very sweet and lovely.
I bet it never tasted as good. I'm thinking of when anytime I've climbed Crowpatrick, that pint of Guinness at the bottom of the mountain never tasted so good. And we know hunger is a great sauce. Natasha, how have you been coping with working from home and through lockdown? Because I think walking and your love of it has helped you through that. Is that right?
It has indeed. I think, like so many people, it's been very, very difficult being so isolated and not having the commute into work and people around you and the chat that you'd have on a day-to-day basis that you wouldn't have necessarily noticed before. It's been a very lonely time, and I have felt sort of paralyzed and frozen in the sense that so much of my normal life has been taken away from me. You know, I can't go and see my friends, I can't go into the office, you know, my work life has totally changed. And I feel very, paralysed. But getting outside has been an absolute saviour to me. I was telling one of your reporters yesterday that there was, you know, I talk about my childhood being when I first sort of fell in love with walking. But I think when I was younger, it was just part of my upbringing. It wasn't until I was about 18 that I really realised what walking did for me. And it was when I was on the Camino with my dad. I was 18, and there was this moment where we had just gone through a place called Estrella. It's famous for the running of the bulls. And my dad and I, being mad, we actually did the running of the bulls. And we met this man called Pablito, and at the time, this is going back to 2010, I think he was about 76 or 80 at the time, and he had no English. And he led my father and I to his house, where he used to make walking sticks for pilgrims, and he used to carefully carve them and pick out a gourd to decorate it with. And he was showing me how he did this, and my dad remembers watching this, and he became very emotional. And it was that moment that Dad realized why he was taking me on the Camino and what it was really giving me.
Right.
And I think about that now when I go walking. Walking really sort of grounds you. It slows everything down, and it pushes all of the other things that are distracting out of your life. Like for me then, it was Dundrum and TV and all that stuff. And it just sort of centers you and brings you back down and slows you down.
It's a lovely story of the Camino, Natasha, but I mean, can you find that in a walk within your 5 kilometre limits now? Are you still getting that same sensation?
I am indeed, and I'm actually delighted with myself, because just before the 5 kilometre restriction, I found a new walk within my 5 kilometres, which is remarkable because I go walking with my dog Randy every day, and it's in Kilcool. It's called the Mass Path. and it is it's an ancient walk that ends up being around 5 kilometres there and back, and it starts just off the main street of Kilcoole. But very quickly you find yourself walking between beautiful countryside, okay, down along St. Patrick's River and along the convent garden wall. It's really beautiful, and I'm delighted I have that.
I'll go back to Moncon. There are walks, there are trails everywhere. I think everyone can find something within their 5 kilometres, Moncon.
Exactly. It seems that just in the last decade, the county councils and then Waterways Ireland and even Fáilte Ireland have done such a key role in trying to put walks everywhere. Like Caolte alone have 230 walks. So you can almost always find a walk. And so normally they're these lovely waymarked walks or looped walks. If we can't, then we just have to make do with just walking our own country roads or area. But it seems like we are better suited, we're better sort of in a better position to find gorgeous walks around us than we've ever been. Like, the government is making it a priority. So it just requires us to make that effort. It's that first push, you know, to put on your coat and go outside. But when you do, there's a wonder world awaiting.
You like to note where you're walking, the names of places, the history of it, Moncon?
Yeah, I mean, I've just spent the last 6 years trying to write this book, The 32 Words for Field, and it is trying to see what we can uncover in the landscape through the language. And God, wherever I go, you just take the place name, and you know, the place names now, when they're written up, the Irish version is always there, and even our school's Irish is enough to give us a hint at what's going on. Like, you're in Kinturk in Cork, and you realise Ceann Turk, the headland of the wild boars, you know, it suddenly comes alive for us. So, yeah, our ancestors named every spot, every rock, every field of the area and put sort of information in it. They're like wormholes, they're like portals of information. So it's like it's an intellectual game to play when you're out walking to see what are the hints, what is the information that's been passed on through the place names that you're walking through.
Shane, you're walking on Killiney Hill every day, I'm told, and sometimes you're aiming for just a mindless walk, just with nothing in your head. Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. I have a little bit of a rant against mindfulness in my book on walking.
A rant against mindfulness.
We should be centred into our own thinking and feeling ourselves as we're feeling our way through life. And I think often what we're better off doing is getting out of our own heads entirely and stop thinking about ourselves. And I think walking gives you that opportunity to just not be present in the moment, but just to range backwards and forwards through your life and think of nothing at all, so that sometimes our biggest source of stress is not what's happening to us in the outside world, but how we think about the outside world.
Okay, and so Shane, we're looking at the weather out there today. Sorry to cut across. You were looking at the weather, the storm. Sometimes you're like, oh, I don't want to get up. And yet I always feel better when I do get out for that walk. Have you any, what would you say to people who need that encouragement?
That is exactly the case. People underestimate how good they'll feel after a walk. And I was just looking at the rain as it was battering my front window here. And I realised I hate walking in the wind and the rain, but I love having walked in the wind and the rain. So there's an interesting paradox.
Okay, well, look, when the wind and the rain clears, I hope you all have a good walk, or even get out in it with a good coat, because it's a good experience too. As you said, Shane and Natasha and Moncon, thank you very much for joining us. And if you'd like to be further inspired, Shane O'Mara's book In Praise of Walking is out in paperback. Moncon McGann's 32 Words for Field has just been published. And the book Buen Camino that Natasha wrote with her father, Peter Murta, when she was still a teenager, about their walk on the Camino de Santiago, is still in print. Now to another great walker. County Clare historian Joe Queeley loves to walk the places that are close to his heart, thinking of those who've travelled those paths before, and he leads many's a good ramble through his native home in the Burren while fundraising for the RNLI lifeboats. Well, the group walks had to be cancelled this year, like many Halloween events this weekend. But as I met Joe for a walk on his farm, the wind and the rain brought us back to those places he loves in a time when homes were lit only by flickering lamplight or a carved turnip and jack-of-the-lantern, as he fondly recalled.
I think the fascination for us growing up in Fanor, that time between the mountain and the sea, I think it was the ghosts and all that, because we would have grown up with ghost stories and they would have frightened the living life out of us. There was a lovely story, I remember, you tell us about Jack of the Lantern.
We'll walk for a bit of shelter here.
And Jack of the Lantern was the only man that ever got a howl to the divil. And the divil, in order to get away from Jack of the Lantern, made a pact with him that when Jack of the Lantern would die, the divil would not take him into hell. that he was bound for heaven. But the problem was when Jack O'Lantern died, when he went up to St. Peter, St. Peter wouldn't take him either. So he come back and he complained to the devil. So the devil threw him a coal. And here he says, roam the earth, he says, for the rest of your life, he says. Roam the earth for the rest of your life, he says. And that's the jack-o'-lantern, jack-o'-the-lantern that you see today is the ghost of jack-o'-the-lantern. That's the one you see today in the trees and everything else. And it was a lovely story, a kind of a ghost story that was told in Fionnuala that time. I don't know if would young lads do it anymore. That time we used to raid the orchard, a rocket. And that's another word for stealing apples from your neighbour's orchard.
You didn't.
We did. We did. It was a tradition and it was something that everybody did, stole the apples. And if you could steal them without being caught. I remember somebody telling about two young lads that coming up to Halloween, they had stolen a bag of apples. They decided they were going to have the apples hid someplace, that they were going to divide the apples. So they were passing the graveyard. And didn't they say, look, God normally catches here. This is the safest place. They caught the bag anyway and they threw the bag in over the gate of the graveyard wall. But didn't two apples happen to fall out just outside the graveyard wall? Anyway, so they were going to pick them up. They said, no, look, we'll pick them up on the way out. So anyway, it was going on a little bit late into night. So two old lads came out of Dunhu's pub and they were making their way home. And the next thing, they passed the graveyard wall and they heard the talk inside the graveyard wall. And they listened for a while and the two lads were dividing the apples, one for you and one for me, and one for you and one for me. And the two old lads decided it was All Souls, All Saints time, that it was God and the devil that were dividing the souls.
The two lads might have had more than apples in the pub.
They were going dividing the souls, one for you, and they listened for a long time. But the two lads were still there, one for you, one for me, one for you, one for me, until the bag was empty. And one of them turned to the other anyway, and he said, what about the two outside the gate? And the two lads took off like fog lightning. They thought that their life was going to be over, that they were going to be swept either into the gates of heaven or down to the flames of hell for drinking porter. And these are my cattle, John, in the Stafford house.
Well sheltered for the winter anyway.
Well sheltered.
As we take shelter from the shower ourselves, you tell me how lucky you are to have your grandchildren beside you, so you haven't had to be without some of them through lockdown.
Happy Halloween!
Dara, 8 years old.
My name is Roisin Jeline and I am 9 years old.
I'm Shane, I'm 11.
My name is Liam, I'm 4.
I'm John, I'm 9.
I'm Jack and I'm 12.
You were telling me you're not going trick-or-treating. What's the plan?
We're going to watch a movie and we're going to have a treasure hunt and going to dress up.
What are you dressing up as?
I'm going to dress up as a Clare hurler.
Okay, as a Clare hurler. Are they scary these days, are they?
Not against Limerick, no.
They'll get there again, I'm sure.
I'm going to dress as a dead sleepwalker.
Wow, sounds scary. What about you?
I'm going to dress as a dead hurler.
A dead hurler? Anyone in mind?
No.
What are you dressing up as?
A Halloween fairy.
Halloween fairy, lovely.
I'm going to be dressing up as a skeleton.
A clown.
What are you looking forward to most?
Playing games with my family.
We're going to have a big party just between our family. We're going to do like jelly bobbing. So you put like the jellies in the water and you put your feet and then you have to try get the jellies in your mouth.
The jellies with your mouth or your feet?
You have to get them in your mouth.
We're going to have a great Halloween. Super Halloween, haven't we, everybody?
Yes.
Now,
I was taken aback in the middle, sometime maybe early October, when somebody said to me, Halloween is cancelled. Christmas is not going to take place. And I said, why shouldn't Halloween take place? It's going to be different in a sense that we're able to celebrate now with each other. And I would say to people all over Ireland, all over the world, wherever they are, to embrace the beauty of Halloween. And to keep within the rules. And to this year, to put out a pumpkin in every house. Put a light in every house. And to enjoy what's around us now. And to enjoy each other's company. And to have food. And to dress up. To very much reach out.
Even if people are not with their grandchildren. Not with anybody. Maybe on their own.
Even if you're on your own. Make the effort to stand up. Put out a light. Do put your light out in the window.
The trick-or-treaters mightn't be knocking on the door tonight, but they'll see those lights. What will that light signify?
That light...
Jack of the lantern again.
That, I think it signals something of the connectivity that we are able, the spirit and the tradition and the great heart that's inside in the people. All over the world, all over Dura, where I'm living now, all over Fanor, all over Roscommon, all over every place, is the connectivity of how we can be together apart. And that's so, so important, how we can be tonight together apart, whether we are on our own, with our family or whoever. We shine the light to show to people that we are a resilient people and that we are going to come back for Christmas. I don't want to hear one person saying we're going to have no Christmas. I am telling you now, we're going to have a great Christmas. Maybe we might be even a little bit freer by Christmas. Please God, we will be. But if we are not, we'll do the very same thing. We'll have it within our own doors. And if we're lucky enough that maybe we can have our grandkids with us, so best. But if not, we'll have it ourselves.
And thanks to Joe Queeley and his lovely grandchildren there, I hope there'll be many treats in store for you all tonight. And just to mention, Dublin City Council have asked people to light a candle or shine a light at 9 o'clock tonight in memory of those who have died this year, in keeping with the tradition of Oíche Thaobhanna or All Hallows Eve. And like Joe there, might I suggest that you shine your light or jack-o'-lantern for the living as well as the deceased this Halloween, and do stay safe in the storms. Hopefully you'll be able to get out for a walk when the wind warnings pass. Well, that's all we've got time for on this week's Countrywide. The programme produced by Eileen Herron, Brian Moss, our broadcast coordinator, and Sheila Niamh Whelan was on sound. Don't forget, Ear to the Ground is back on RTE One on Thursday evening. Stay tuned for playback after the 9 o'clock news here on Radio One. I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. But for now, from me, John Cook, happy Halloween, and thanks for listening.
Countrywide on RTE Radio One, sponsored by the Irish Farmers Journal, bringing 295,000 readers the latest farming news and the best of rural Ireland weekly.